We hit pick number 22 now on the Amateur Hour podcast mock draft. I'm Brian Gibberman here with Sam Fassini and Ricky O'Donnell from SB Nation. Does a lot of draft stuff for them. Their college hoops editor. Ricky, what's going on? He's helping us out with the Bulls, by the way.
What's up, dudes? Thanks for having me on.
Thank you for taking time out. Why have the Bulls been so damn good at drafting over the years?
Well, you know, you say that because the Bulls have had some major hits in the late first round of the draft. I mean, to get Jimmy Butler with the last pick in the first round and Nikola Mirotic in the same draft the year after finishing with the best record in the NBA, like, that is still mind-blowing to me to this day that the Bulls are able to pull off that coup. They also, of course, landed Taj Gibson in the 20s. But if you look at their last three drafts, they really have not gotten much out of them. The Doug McDermott trade 1 year in looks terrible. I still think McDermott will be a good player for the team, but it's going to be very difficult for him to ever justify trading two top 20 picks to get him. Tony Snell's been up and down. I actually like Tony Snell as a player. I'd like to see them give him a real chance next year, maybe play him 30 minutes a game, let him get an opportunity. But, you know, up to this point, certainly guys like Gorgui Jang and Plumlee look like they've had better careers, and those would have been, also options in play for the Bulls at that pick. And then, of course, the Marquise Teague pick is going to go down as one of those things where, you know, Teague, I believe he was the last pick in the first round as well. From my perspective, you can't get too mad about that, especially after all the success the Bulls have had late in the draft. But, of course, when Tom Thibodeau left the team, he was very quick to leak the fact that the Bulls wanted Draymond Green with that pick, and the front office took Teague. So while the Bulls have had a lot of success late in the draft, who knows if it's sustainable, because these last 3 years haven't been particularly inspiring, I don't think.
Yeah, I think it's hard. For me, it's hard to nitpick on them that much, especially with something like Green. I mean, that happened once when you find the guys you mentioned. If they miss on one like that, I'm not going to go crazy. The trade was the worst thing they've done, and I'm with you. I'm a Tony Snell believer, so I think if you end up with a rotation player where they took him, that's something that's hard to complain about also.
Yeah, I would agree with that. You know, in every team in the league can play this game, right? You can always look back at the guys you didn't draft, and so that's sort of hindsight at this point is it's a little much to complain about, especially given the way the Bulls have been able to pluck Butler and Mirotic and Gibson and all these other contributors from late in the draft the last, you know, 6-7 years.
Swinging over to free agency real quick before we get back into the draft, is there any chance the Bulls do a bullish type thing with Jimmy Butler here?
Well, so I wrote about this yesterday after the report that Butler's seeking a short-term deal, and really that's to be expected. Butler bet on himself before the season. If you remember last year, he averaged, 1 year ago today, he was coming into a contract discussion off a season where he averaged 13 points a game. He shot under 40% from the field. He shot under 30% from three-point range. The Bulls offered him $10 or $11 million a year annually in a four-year deal. It seemed like a fair trade, or a fair offer, I should say, but Jimmy turned it down, and he certainly made himself a ton of money by doing that. He blossomed into a 20-point-per-game scorer. He continued to be one of the best wing defenders in the league and, you know, became an all-star for the first time, won most improved player. I think that if he really is going to go through with this again, and why wouldn't he, to turn down the long-term money, to turn down $90 million this year to try to get $190 million in 2017 or 18, whenever it may be, you know, the Bulls still have all the power is the thing. Like, if the Bulls want Jimmy Butler on the team, he's going to be on the team. Butler's going to try to maximize his future earnings, as he should. As a Bulls fan, I'm certainly rooting for Butler to take every single penny he can make, and I hope it's from Jerry Reinsdorf's extremely deep pockets, because the Bulls have the money to pay him. Just pay the guy when it comes up. Butler will determine the length of the contract, but he's going to be in Chicago regardless as long as the Bulls want him there, because he's a restricted free agent. And that's one thing that I think that maybe more casual fans don't understand after seeing the Wojnarowski report last night.
Are you going to be boycotting the Entourage movie in order to you know, protest the potential Jimmy Butler signing with the Lakers.
Yeah, like, is Mark Wahlberg being the bad influence in Jimmy's ear, telling him to go to LA? Because I just can't respect that right now. I think I do have to boycott the Entourage movie, but to be honest, I was going to boycott it originally because I'm not much of an Entourage fan. If you like it, that's cool. I'm not here to judge the things that you like or don't like, but, you know, not really my jam regardless.
Liar, you are here to judge what everyone likes. That's the point of talking.
Okay, well, we'll talk about basketball, not Entourage, I guess.
Damn it, I had some more Entourage-related questions.
Let's hear it. Just fire away, Sam.
Will you boycott the rest of Jeremy Piven's career if he signs with the Lakers?
Yes. Yes, I will. I pledge to boycott the rest of Jeremy Piven's career should he sign with the Lakers. And every Ted sequel. Put that in there, too.
Every Ted sequel?
I've never seen it, but...
You're a monster.
Yeah, every Ted sequel.
That's the end of my Entourage-related questions. If he's already disparaging Ted, that's all I got for Ricky at this point. I don't even like the movie Ted that much. I just think it's funny that you went straight to Ted.
You know, gloves off for the NBA Draft podcast.
The mittens of disapproval are on.
So with this team and where they are, what do you want to see? What do you want their plan of attack to be this offseason?
Well, so they're not going to have very much cap space. I mean, as soon as they max out Butler, they're going to have zero cap space, really. Dunleavy is a free agent. This past season, Dunleavy got hurt in January, and the Bulls sucked without him. They were playing under 500 basketball. They had no shooting on the floor without him. And, you know, even though he's a role player, he was their best outside shooter in a team with, you know, D-Rose shooting six threes a game at, like, 28%. And, and a two-post team with Powell and Noah. Noah, you know, was throwing up prayers 2 feet from the basket most of the season. They just had no spacing, no shooting when Dunleavy went out, which is why people are going to question me when I say this, but I would probably let Dunleavy go to give Snell a bigger opportunity. Like, you're not going to know what you have in Snell unless he's playing 30 minutes a game. And I think this is the year you can do that. You look at the makeup of the team, and I'm really hoping the one move Hoiberg makes is inserting Mirotić at the four over Gasol. At that point, the Bulls are going to have Rose and Butler in the backcourt with Mirotić at the four. That's going to be a lot of high-usage offensive players. Rose and Butler are going to occupy a lot of possessions. They're going to have the ball in their hands a ton. Mirotić is similarly going to be a guy who, you know, is going to need a certain number of shot attempts. So when you look at the makeup of the team, I think that out of your other wing starter at that point, you just sort of want a 3-and-D guy, a guy who is athletic, can get up and down the floor, who can defend and who can hit an open shot when the ball rotates to him. And I think that Snell has the skill set to do that. He's pretty athletic. He's got a 7-foot wingspan. He's a streaky but good enough 3-point shooter, I think. And he's never really gotten a real opportunity to play. So I think that the hole the Bulls have at, you know, whatever you want to call it, small forward or shooting guard, depending on where you're going to play Jimmy, they need the type of player that Tony Snell could eventually turn into. So I would bet on Snell. I mean, why not? They don't have much other room to play with. So I would trust your young player, trust your evaluation on him, and let's see what he can do.
And he shot 37% on the almost 200 three-point attempts last year. So it definitely makes sense to give him a real shot at it. If they were going to trade any of their big men, which one do you think would be the one to go?
I would trade Gasol. There's been a lot of talk about trading Taj, but I think trading Taj is insane, honestly, and as soon as you trade him, you're going to want a player just like him. Gibson is a guy who's currently in the prime of his career for a team that wants to win right now. He's a guy who can play power forward or center as a third big man that's extremely valuable. I hate to do this to you, Brian, but I remember a couple years ago when Tyson Chandler got hurt when the Knicks were coming off that 54-win season. The Knicks basically had no rim protection, no interior defense when Chandler got hurt, and the entire season went to hell. So Taj is such a good interior defender. I just don't think you can trade plus interior defenders like that, especially when they give you something offensively. just to, you know, free up this front court glut. Like, to me, Gasol is the redundant player there because he's the no defense, offensive first big man. That is the same role Mirotić hopes to occupy, and Mirotić is 10 years younger than Gasol. So Gibson's combination of interior defense, his contract is super team friendly, 2 years, $8 million left per season. I just think he's such a valuable player, even if he did start to slip a bit last year. And I really hope they don't trade Gibson, even though I believe it will be rumored throughout the offseason. If it was me, I would trade Gasol. But I wouldn't even trade Gasol. I'd keep him all. I would probably play Gasol 20 minutes a game off the bench, really reduce his minutes, try to sell him on the Andre Iguodala package of, hey, man, you can be finals MVP if we don't play you that much during the season. And hopefully the Bulls can continue to have a really stocked, deep, talented front court that is just better... better used, I guess, than it was last season.
Okay, you would rather trade Gasol out of Gibson and him. Which one do you think would be more likely to go in a trade?
Yeah, I think Gasol, or I think Gibson's more likely to go. It's already been rumored quite a bit, but I don't know why. I really don't. I just gave the argument for that. I know, but
yeah,
I think Gibson's too valuable. But yeah, I mean, Gibson's going to be at the center of trade rumors for sure this year. I think that is what I expect, at least.
Isn't Noah the one that if they could get something of real value for, maybe the one that makes the most logical sense?
Yeah, but the thing with Noah is he has 1 year, $12 million left on his deal. It expires 1 year from now. So, like, at that point, Noah is really the heart and soul of the team. He's had an amazing career. 1 year ago, he was fourth in MVP voting and Defensive Player of the Year. Now, he was trash last year. There's no way around it. He was not very good, especially offensively. He was just a straight-up abomination. However, why not just let him play out his contract? I mean, he means so much. He really is the most popular, one of the most popular athletes in the city, by far the most popular Bulls player in the city. Every person here loves joking Noah. It's just the fact of the matter. So hopefully he gets healthy over the season. He takes, you know, the offseason to rest a bit, get his body back in shape. And while I would trade Noah, like, if you can get the fourth pick from the Knicks for joking Noah.
No, we're not even discussing that option. Nope.
Sure.
Can we please discuss that option Brian spontaneously combusts?
No, we're not allowed
I'm sorry, Brian. you know, if you could do something like that, for sure, I do without even thinking about it. But realistically, I can't imagine some team is really going to offer the Bulls a super tight package for Noah. And in that case, I just hold on to him for a year. See what you got in him. Why not?
Question. Did Doug McDermott throw a massive party in Iowa the day that Fred Hoiberg was hired?
Yeah, it was probably like a Mario tennis party or a Mario party because I just don't imagine Doug McDermott like being...
You don't think Doug McDermott gets down?
I don't think he's going to turn up super hard at the Iowa club. I don't know. Maybe that's just me, but
I mean, what else is there to do at Creighton but turn up?
I don't know, man. You would know more than I would. I couldn't even begin to guess. But like you said, McDermott and Hoiberg went to the same high school. Like, McDermott stands to benefit from Hoiberg's hire as much as anyone, and, you know, hopefully the Bulls are able to utilize him better next year because God knows they got nothing out of him last season.
Is there an excitement level around the Bulls about Hoiberg? Is this whole Thibodeau to the Hoiberg thing being taken in positively, or people pissed about losing Tibbs?
You know, it's always sort of tough for me to project what casual fans think or what the conventional wisdom thinks or what the conventional wisdom is because I think, like, people like the three of us, we're, like, so ingrained in sort of this vortex of basketball opinion. A lot of us probably always think we're right about things, and I think that, you know, a lot of the casual fans probably don't like Hoiberg. They're upset because the Thibodeau era was legitimately great. As a fan, I mean, they got an MVP in Rose, they got the Defensive Player of the Year in Noah, they got the Most Improved Player in Butler, they had a ton of injuries, but the team was, it was a fun team to root for, because they always tried super hard, they competed. I personally believe it was absolutely the time to fire Thibodeau, but, you know, the Bulls handled it like idiots, like they always do. They somehow made themselves look bad in a decision I completely agree with, so I think for a lot of those reasons... you know, people aren't like, I don't think many people are jacked up about Hoiberg, and people don't pay attention to college basketball the way the three of us pay attention to college basketball either. I am personally very excited for Fred Hoiberg, and I think people will be sold on Hoiberg as soon as they see the way this team's going to play, or the way that I hope they're going to play. But right now, I would say that, you know, the Game 6 loss to Cleveland left such a bad taste in everyone's mouth. I was at that game. The Bulls just rolled over. It was 36-36 in the second quarter with 9 minutes left when Kyrie Irving got hurt. And the Cavs just ran the Bulls off the floor after that. The Bulls really just gave up, and it was a really inexcusable performance for the team, for everyone involved in the team. Because of that, I don't think that, you know, there's a lot of off-season optimism right now.
Yeah, no, I think Hoiberg's going to be extremely successful with the Bulls. His system just meshes with where the league is going at this point. He likes guys that can play multiple positions, that have a lot of different versatilities, like passing, that can shoot the ball. He likes highly skilled players more than he likes, like, terrific athletic players. And that's going to be really fun, I think, with the Bulls. I'm really excited to see, in particular, what he can do with Joakim Noah on offense, because I think that Noah, he might just run the offense through Noah in the way that he did this year with George Niang, and that would be so fun.
Yeah, but I mean, the Bulls did that when Rose was hurt. They ran the point Noah offense.
Well, there's a difference for me between point Noah offense with Thibodeau and point Noah offense with Hoiberg.
Sure, yeah, sure, that's a fair point for sure. I mean, the problem with Noah is first of all, he's 6'11", 235, so he's always been one of the smallest centers. Second of all, he's never had a consistent jump shot. So when Noah was really, really good, it was because he was so athletic. He had such a quick first step. He could get to the basket. He could just make things happen with hustle points and stuff. But now he's on the wrong side of 30. Injuries have maybe started to sap some of that athleticism. So, I mean, I don't know. Having the ball in Joakim Noah's hands, I just don't think he's a threat anywhere on the floor. We'll see. Hoiberg's a lot smarter than I am, though. So I trust him to figure it out one way or another.
Yeah, I think that, like, between the passing of him, the passing of Gasol, even Rose, to a lesser extent, has worse vision than those guys, but still, he's a pretty solid passer. Mirotić is a good passer for a big guy. There's going to be so much ball movement, or off-ball movement, on this team this year that I think it's going to be incredible to watch. I think they're going to be incredibly fun.
Yeah, I think so, too. I'm really optimistic, and, you know, a lot of it has to do with Rose, because they're not going to, you know, for all the criticism Rose faces, especially locally, there's, like, basically, if you're a dad, you hate D. Rose in the city, which is really sad, or an uncle, or whatever, but, you know, they don't have another point guard on the team who's nearly as talented as Rose, and maybe we'll get into that with the 22nd pick, but the Bulls need Rose to be healthy, they need him to be productive, and you know, if Rose can be the player that he showed to be in spurts last season, he doesn't need to be the MVP. He doesn't even need to be a top 10 point guard, really. He just needs to be a healthy, productive player for the team. And if that's the case, they could be really good.
And last year seemed to be a step in the right direction with him, how they handled the season. I mean, they did a much better job with him than they had previously. Hoiberg would seem to be someone, I don't know a ton about him, but you would think he'd be smart enough to continue the path that they started out along.
For sure, yeah. I mean, I think last year, you know, the big point of contention between Thibodeau and the front office was these minutes restrictions, which a normal person would not have felt was a threat to their job, but of course Thibodeau's psychotic, and he thought that this was basically cutting the legs out from under him. So Rose was not allowed to play more than 32 minutes a game. That drove Thibodeau insane, but I think that that's really what's going to help Rose moving forward is, you know what, Steph didn't play 24th quarters this year or something? Like, you need to conserve these guys quite a bit, and especially D. Rose more than anyone else. You saw the, I'm sure you guys are familiar with the stats they showed during the postseason where when D. Rose had, you know, 1 or 0 days rest, he was basically terrible. When he had 2 days rest, he was awesome. So there's a lot of evidence at this point that suggests that, you know, don't run D-Rose into the ground. I think that's part of the reason the Bulls will be looking for a point guard at 22, but don't run D-Rose into the ground, and, you know, hopefully he can get back to being a healthy and productive player for the team in the short term and the long term.
we have our mock draft that we're doing, but obviously the real draft could play out differently. So if point guard's away, it didn't work out with Teague. Free agency, the Bulls don't have a lot of money, and there's not a ton of options from a point guard perspective out there. So as you said, this might be the best spot for the Bulls to get a point guard. How do you look at these point guards and their fit with the Bulls?
You know, I don't know if you guys get the same sense. I guess Sam would be more in the position to get this sense, but I feel like it's really clear the Bulls want Jerry and Grant. I remember seeing throughout the season tweets of just like, you know, the Bulls were at Notre Dame scouting his games, around the road scouting his games. John Paxson, of course, went to Notre Dame. Jerry and Grant's uncle Horace, of course, played for the Bulls for their first three championships. And his size at 6'5", and his ability to play either the one or the two, I think. And his age, too. The Bulls have never been scared of drafting an old prospect. Taj was an old prospect at the time when they drafted him. Taj was older than Tyrus Thomas when they drafted him, even though Tyrus was drafted, I believe, 2 years before.
Taj was like 24 when he was drafted, wasn't he?
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah, and I mean, that pick worked out awesome for him. So, I think they want Jerry and Grant. I don't think he's going to be there for him, but, I mean, we'll see.
Yeah, Grant would be a really good fit in Hoiberg's offense as well. At Notre Dame, they played that wide-open system with Mike Bray. A lot of shooters around him, and, you know, the Bulls don't necessarily have that yet, but they could eventually, or they could even as soon as this year. That would be a very good fit for Jaren Grant. I just don't see a way he's getting to 22. Might be worth a trade-up for him. Might be worth maybe dealing Taj Gibson for a first-round pick just to make Ricky angry because I knew he didn't want to trade Taj. But I would probably look more in the DeLon Wright direction here. DeLon Wright kind of fits the model of what Hoiberg had with DeAndre Kane last year at Iowa State, a guy that just gets into the rim. He's not necessarily the best athlete, but he gets to the rim just in the easiest, most effortless way. He's long. He can play defense. There's a lot to like there about DeLon Wright with the Bulls.
I love DeLon Wright. I think anyone who pays attention to college basketball was really captivated by him for the last 2 years, but specifically last season. He's a guy who, without looking at his numbers, I really wouldn't have guessed he was an 84% free throw shooter and a 35% three-point shooter last year because he doesn't look like he just has a natural comfort level shooting the ball from the perimeter. Mm-hmm. However, like you said, Sam, he does so many other things well. Good athlete, very good defender, has a great knack for steals each of his 2 years at Utah. I think that he's an intelligent defender, which is just as important as having the physical gifts to defend. And while I don't know if he's a brilliant passer, he's a damn good passer, and he's going to make the easy play and the smart play more often than not. Really, the concern with him is just his three-point shot, but, you know, he does so many other things well that, like, I don't know, if he's only a 32% three-point shooter or something on low volume of attempts, can you live with that? I think that, you know, maybe you can. So he's a guy who they will certainly look at with that 22nd pick.
Who else interests you at 22, Ricky?
So I feel like most of the draft dudes, like Kevin O'Connor, maybe Jarks a little bit too, have shot me down for my opinion on this. So I'd like to pick your brain, both of you guys, on this. I like Terry Rozier for the Bulls. I think Rozier would be a good fit. To me, like, I like Tyus Jones a lot too, but if you look at Tyus Jones versus Rozier, two guys who could potentially be available at this pick, while Rozier is probably a little bit of a reach at 22, I don't think that matters. Value in the NBA draft, who cares about it? This isn't the NFL. You just get the best player and that's it. You're done with it. I think Rozier's defensive upside is really tremendous. He was a guy who at Louisville under Pitino was terrific in their full court press schemes. He's a superior athlete, probably to Wright, I would say.
Definitely a better athlete than Wright.
Yeah, better athlete than Wright. Certainly a better athlete than Tyus Jones.
He's probably a better athlete than Jaren Grant, probably a better athlete than, you know, any point guard in this draft. He might be a better athlete than, like, he's... Yeah. an incredible athlete. He gets into the lane. He's long. And he defends. Like Ricky said, he defends his ass off. And I love Terry Rozier. I've come around. I've done a full 180 on Terry Rozier as a player and as a prospect. I think that he has a pretty good shot to stick in the NBA.
Yeah, I don't know if go ahead, Ricky.
Well, I was just going to say, like, the thing with Rozier is, first of all, he wants to defend, which is something that you're not going to find from a lot of people. He not only has the tools, but he's got the mindset for it. And, you know, he's kind of got the similar thing with Wright, where he's sort of a bad outside shooter, but he also hit 80% of his free throws. Is a freshman at Louisville in limited minutes. I want to say he hit 37% of his three-pointers. He also just has really good scoring instincts, I think. I don't want that to be confused with, like, a great feel for the game, because I've heard people sort of criticize Rozier's feel for the game. Mm-hmm. And, of course, he only averaged 3 assists this year. He might be more of a two-guard and a point guard's body. Maybe he's not, you know, a classic floor general. But as we've mentioned earlier in the podcast, the Bulls have a lot of naturally gifted passers, where I feel like you could potentially get away with a point guard who could be a great defender, super athletic, who could really get the tempo the way Hoiberg's going to want it, where he's not a great outside shooter, maybe not a super gifted passer. You know, he's also, what, 21 years old, so he can develop all that too. So I would sort of like Rozier at 22. Most people think I'm crazy for saying this.
I think you kind of sold me on this a little bit. I think you have kind of sold me on this a little bit. I don't know that I would take him over Sam Decker, who I'm not even particularly high on. I don't know that I would take him over I probably wouldn't take him over Tyus Jones, because I trust Tyus a little bit more than some people do to kind of figure it out in the NBA. I might not take Rozier over even a Justin Anderson at this point, but I do like what Rozier brings. I like basically everything that Ricky said, his motor, his character, his heart. We've seen in the playoffs how far motor, character, and heart can get you. Just look at Draymond Green. Look at freaking Matthew Dellavedova. Imagine a smaller version of Matthew Dellavedova, but a guy that has that kind of same drive and that kind of heart, and he plays that kind of defense. That's what Terry Rozier can bring you. He's long. He's extremely athletic. The problem for him is that he's a scorer that can't really shoot and can't really finish at the rim. That's kind of a death knell in the NBA, so he'll need to be able to do one of those, in my opinion. If he can figure out one of those, he's going to have a long career, possibly even like in the Lou Williams mold. But if he doesn't, I think he might struggle.
Which one do you think he's more likely to improve upon?
I would probably... That's tough.
Well, he was 55% at the rim, according to... Jeff Haley. That's below average.
Well, that's below average, and it's because they got out into transition so much. He was like mid-40s in the half court.
Okay.
So that's not great.
That's bad.
He kind of sounds a little like Deion Waiters.
He is kind of Deion Waiters-y, actually. That's a very good comparison, but he's a much better defender. He just does more things than Deion did.
Doesn't he have the explosion and the length and the strength sort of to theoretically project as a good finisher at the rim?
Yeah, not really the strength, but yeah, I mean...
I'm just throwing that out there.
His length and explosion, you would think, would help him. The strength scares me. And the jump shot is getting better, I'll say that. Like, it looked much different at the combine. It looked better, even in the games that he was playing. It sped up a little bit. Whenever he's taking those shooting drills, he was able to slow down and really knock them down. But, you know, in the games, it sped up a little bit. Wasn't as good, wasn't as crisp. But it showed some, at least, room for improvement, some projection. And that's really all you're hoping for in a jump shot from a guy like him, is the ability to project it. Now, I think that you have sold me a little bit on Rozier here. Being a solid pick for the Bulls, I think that I buy into that pretty well.
Yeah, and, you know, the thing that I noticed, I watched a lot of Louisville last year, and I think Rozier's, like, pull-up game from mid-range is kind of money. I have no stats to back that up, but, like, he looked like he could shoot from the mid-range. It was like he could, you know, pop when he needed to from about, I don't know, 17, 18 away. And in the NBA, of course, you need to space everything to the three-point line, so, like, if you can shoot from 17 feet away, you still sort of can't shoot, in a sense. because you need everything to be spaced so perfectly. But I do think there's room for improvement there, especially with the high free throw rate. The fact that you shot 37% as a freshman, so I think there's some room for growth there.
And being able to hit a mid-range jumper is a skill you still want to have. We saw it in Game 6 last night. A lot of the Warriors' offense came from them running pick and roll with Andre Iguodala, him taking two steps in and knocking in a jumper over Timothy Mozgov. So as much as we want all threes and you want shots at the rim, but you still have to be able to force teams to defend all levels of the court.
So
it's true.
I can tell you what Rozier's number was on jump shots off the dribble in the half court. He took 116 of them and knocked down 46 of them for a 0.828 points per possession. That's actually in the 63rd percentile in all of college basketball last season. That's pretty good. Not too bad considering what you would expect from his jump shot. And that's from our very good friends at Synergy Sports Technology.
Impressive how quickly you pulled that up.
I'm very adept on the Synergy machine.
I'm jealous.
Yeah, I miss the super Synergy and being able to look at everything.
It is very nice. Synergy Sports Tech, I salute you. I love you. Thank you. You make my life much easier. You are a golden god.
Ricky, so do we just kick him off the podcast now?
Yeah, get out of here, Sam. This is Brian. Shut up.
This is, No. Ricky is replacing me from here on out. I understand.
No, everyone.
Done with you, Sam, damn it. Anything else Bulls-wise that we want to touch on here, or are we ready to have Ricky do his pick?
I don't know, Ricky, what do you want to talk about?
I think we hit most of the stuff I've been thinking about. I've been on the Start Tony Snell and Don't Trade Taj bandwagon, so I got to complain about both of those things loudly on the internet. What more can you ask for?
That's what we're here for. We're here to let people vent.
I feel like we're a pretty good outlet for that, actually. We just let people talk, and, you know, if anyone has problems, feel free to come on the podcast. We'll help you take care of them. Maybe we'll just be an advice columnist from now on. We'll just be an advice podcast.
I would feel bad for the people getting that advice, but
this is true.
That's a direction we could go. All right, so Ricky, who do you want to take with the pick?
I still don't know. This is why that being a blogger is way easier than being a decision maker, because, I mean, I can talk myself into Terry Rozier. I can talk myself into even Sam Decker. Why not? Sam Decker's still available on the board with this pick. He's probably considered the best player, I guess, with this pick, but you know what? I'm going to go with Justin Anderson for a few different reasons.
Ooh, you went with the surprise there. Wasn't expecting you to go down that road after the discussion.
Yeah, you know,
I feel like we need like a surprise drop in of some sort where someone just comes out of nowhere and takes them.
Yeah, so I'm gonna go Anderson. Now this would be the Bulls' third straight draft taking a wing in the first round. Snell, then McDermott, now Anderson. And while that might be somewhat troubling, I don't know how the Bulls are going to find a backup point guard there and need to do that, but, I mean, there's a million point guards, right? You can find one in Europe, you can find one.
You can always bring back Kirk Heinrich.
Oh, God, please no. Anyone but Kirk Heinrich. Anyone but Kirk Heinrich would be fine, but the thing is, especially after watching these finals, like, it's a wings league, man. If Draymond Green is playing center, why can't Justin Anderson play center in a super small ball attack? That's obviously a pretty big projection, but you know, I think you guys get the point of what I'm saying, that if the NBA is really going to this sort of emphasis on two-way athleticism and shooting ability, I mean, Justin Anderson's got that. He's 6'6", he's 235. I saw him walking around the NBA Draft Combine, and I was sort of taken aback at just how jacked he is. Like, that is a big, strong, mean dude who has the type of facial hair where it looks like he should have been in Disturbed or like some other terrible nu metal band from 1999. I like that. That's funny. I don't know if he's going to be able to be a 45% three-point shooter like he was this year. The finger injury at Virginia certainly limited his effectiveness after that, but I think he can still be a pretty good three-point shooter. I think he can be a hell of a defender. And I look at Snell and McDermott as your other two wings, and I'm not positive either of those guys could be a starter next to Jimmy. I think Anderson might actually project as a better player than both those dudes, so why not? Give me Anderson. I think that he's probably the best player on the board left, in my opinion, at this point, so let's go with it.
Did you just, like, have to point out that Justin Anderson's hair is funny? Like,
his facial so hair. Yeah, I mean, I don't know.
Dressing.
I think he could be a Disturbed. That is my typical Justin Anderson line.
He does look like the guy in, he does have the facial hair of the guy in Smash Mouth who's in the news recently. So I'm all for Justin Anderson at this point. I really do like his fit with the Bulls, like Ricky said. I think this is a smart move. I think he's going to be a very strong player as long as the jump shot is for real. And with Fred Hoiberg, I think that they would figure out a way to continue to develop the jump shot and continue to get it to where it needs to be consistently.
You don't have to sell me on Justin Anderson. I think there's actually a couple guys that have been taken in the mock draft that we've done that I would take him over. I know he's a little bit older, but I really like his game. I like his versatility, and if the jump shot holds up, I definitely think he could be a starting wing in this league. So I'm with you guys.
I kind of wonder if I'm a little bit too low on him and a little bit too high on Rondae Hollis-Jefferson. I have Anderson at 24, RHJ at 18. I think I might be a little bit off on that. I might have to readjust my rankings this week.
I mean, here's the thing with Anderson. Like, the jump shot is going to be the big talk. He hit 45% of 4 3-point attempts a game. I mean, he does not have to shoot 45%. Like, 45% is ridiculous. He doesn't need to shoot 45% to be a good player. If he can shoot 37% from the NBA line, 38%, I mean, obviously that's still a competent, efficiency rate. I mean, that would make him a really good player. People talk about, you know, I think the 3-point shot is unsustainable. He doesn't need to shoot 45%. 45% is crazy.
I would just like to point out that we said this same thing basically about Derek Williams at Arizona.
Yeah. I mean, I thought Derek Williams was going to be awesome. So
yeah.
What do I know?
So did I.
But I believed in him. I'm not going to lie to you. I thought he was going to be pretty solid.
I would say the worry about Anderson is that it's not that what he did last year was unsustainable, and the 37% would be perfectly fine. It's that he shot 29% and 30% in the first 2 years.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, that's definitely a cause for concern, but you know, it's funny because I would look at Jerry and Grant's low 3-point percentage this year and RJ Hunter's and just totally dismiss it. Be like, you know, those guys are better shooters than, especially Hunter in particular, better shooters than they showed percentage-wise last year. But with Anderson, I'm willing to give him the benefit of the doubt that he really did just improve as a shooter. I think his role at Virginia just got so much better. You know, their backcourt there, I never know how to pronounce it. Is it Malcolm Brogdon?
Brogdon.
Brogdon was commanding so much attention. London Perentes was obviously the guy who was sort of steering that ship. And I think that it just put Anderson in the position where he could cut around screens and finish lobs. He had the athleticism to do that, which I loved from a wing. Because, you know, it's not only a flashy play, but it's a pretty efficient and effective play when it's pulled off, right? He was money from the corners on 3-point shots. And he's got the athleticism to just be a killer in transition. He's got the mindset to be a really good defender. And I think in this NBA, he can probably guard 2 through 4, which, like,
yep.
I mean, hell, with the 7-foot wingspan, what more are you looking for with the 22nd pick in the draft?
I agree with you. I agree with all of those things.
What he did at Virginia, like, with Kentucky, it's a pain in the ass to try and project these kids. Like, with Anderson, what he did at college was very projectable to the NBA. It doesn't take much imagination to see how it all works.
That's a very good point, and I think it sort of just fits in with the idea, too, that he's kind of got the skill set for the way the game's going. He's got the versatility. I don't know if he's a good, great passer or any of that, but, you know, maybe that's something you work on. Maybe that's something that, you know, you can sort of see him in the position where he sort of uses either a screener or a ball handler, sort of nowadays the way it's going. And he could be leading those, you know, 3-on-2, you know, mismatches out of the pick and roll the way Draymond was in Golden State in the finals. Now, obviously, he's more of a wing than Draymond's more of a frontcourt player, but I still think, you know, the overall package sort of fits in with the way the game's going, and, you know, if the Bulls took him at 22, I'd be pretty happy about it.
Yeah, no, I wouldn't blame you. I think it's a solid pick.
Anything you have going on at SB Nation that you'd like people to know and hear about?
Oh, well, I stayed up super late last night and wrote a Steve Kerr piece about how Steve Kerr unlocked the Warriors' potential by letting them listen to loud and ignorant music during practice. I really think that was the key. Like, for all the X's and O's with Steve Kerr, he just, like, let them have fun, and he let them, like, listen to Nelly songs super loud at practice. And, you know, I think that if you guys ever hoop yourself, everyone plays basketball a little bit better when they're listening to rap music. So that's the one thing that I threw out there today on Steve Kerr piece. And yesterday I wrote a long thing about Jimmy Butler over at Bloggable. You can find it if you're interested in that.
The stats back up that your idea about the rap and playing basketball. I've done the research into it.
Yeah, the math checks out on that one.
Yeah, I'm with Ricky on this one. I can totally buy that. Steve Kerr for Coach of the Year because he lets his players listen to rap music.
He got David Lee. The time I knew, the moment I knew the Warriors were going to win the championship was when I saw that video of David Lee singing that Big Sean song with Drake and all those dudes. Like, the whole team singing it on the plate and David Lee having his arms up yelling the chorus. That's when I knew the Warriors were going to win the title, I'd like to think.
This is, I have new ways to project NBA champions. I'm going to be looking for videos of teams singing this summer, and then that's how I'm going to pick who's going to win. Ricky has all the answers for us.
It's a market inefficiency, let's be honest.
All right, Ricky, thank you very much, man. Really appreciate it. Good stuff. And that wraps up another edition of the Amateur Hour Podcast Mock Draft.